Hi everyone, welcome to a new episode of Remote Insights. This is Alison Bees. I will be your host for this episode. For this season of Remote Insights, we'll be releasing an episode every couple of weeks featuring founders, CEOs, VPs, and many tech experts that will share their insights on remote work, building distributed teams, and even tips on landing your dream job. So be sure to keep an eye out every couple of weeks. Today, I'm joined by Nexstone's co-founder and CEO, Diego Sternberg, and we also have a very special guest with us today, Yura Rifiak. Yura is a seasoned entrepreneur, advisor, mentor, university teacher, and founder of many startups such as Uteam, which was actually the world's first B2B marketplace for engineering talent. As the CEO and co-founder of Uteam, Yura is here today along with Diego to talk about hiring and outsourcing solutions for fast-growing companies, how the rise of a global and decentralized workforce opened the door to a new approach to sourcing talent, and how to build your international hiring or outsourcing strategy. Hi, Diego. Hi, Yura. How are you doing today?
Hi, Alison. Doing good. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for joining.
Good to see you. Good to be sharing this time with Yura. We've been working together for a few years now.
So I'd love for us to deep dive into the changes that have been occurring in hiring and recruiting processes in this era, particularly after the pandemic. My first question for you both is, how did the rise of a global and decentralized workforce open the door to a new approach to sourcing talent?
I know Diego might have a different opinion, but I'm a great believer in that the future of work is contracting. Like what you mentioned, you know, the global landscape changing towards more hiring in other countries, like companies are being more and more open to it. It is one trend, right? It's rather an old trend that we've seen for a long time. It just got a push because of COVID. But there is another trend, which I deem no less important, and which is largely overlooked. And this is the acceleration of technological change. Like, things are changing for everyone, and especially for businesses, especially those who are trying, you know, to be on the cutting edge, on the front line pretty rapidly. And this process is speeding up. And as a result, the skills are getting obsolete faster and faster. And that's why more and more companies resort to hiring contract workforce, because there is more flexibility, there is shorter time to hire. You also can optimize for, you know, higher level of expertise and so on. And at the same time, this for employees themselves, for people, this is also the way to have be engaged in different kind of jobs while keeping, you know, financial security and job security intact, and like not finding themselves in looking for a job every couple of months. So for me, this is like the biggest trend that dominates like the current landscape. If you look at stats by Gartner, for example, the amount of work done by contractors has tripled in the last decade. And we anticipate it to like grow even more and more. And especially that from the legal perspective, right? Like, unless you establish like a unit, you know, like an entity in the foreign country, basically all your employees are contractors, which brings it one step closer to it.
So we've been talking about globalization for a super long time, right? I remember attending university and talking about globalization. But if you were to go back 3 years and try to find companies that were really hiring globally, you wouldn't have been able to find many. There were not that many companies hiring talent globally. Most companies were still going to the office and trying to collaborate in that office space and really hiring talent locally, right? So what's been happening over the past, it started happening a little bit before COVID, a little bit before the pandemic, but the pandemic definitely accelerated the trend by many, many times. companies started to open up to the idea of hiring talent remotely wherever they are. And that really opened up the doors for two things to happen, really. One is companies now have access to, you know, the best talent, and they don't need to be in the same city. So we're talking about the global optimum and not the local optimum, which of course allows companies to attract by default, better, by definition, better talent. So better talent, you know, build stronger teams and really hire the right people to build whatever they're building. And I'm not only talking about engineers, which is mainly what both Uteam and Nexton do, but I'm talking about talent in general, right? The world is going in the direction of, you know, talent from any part of the world can be part of, you know, whichever project is, you know, ideally the most meaningful, the most purposeful, and the most impactful. So that's one side of the equation. The other side of the equation is what all of this means to the talent. And to the talent, this can be also transforming, because suddenly they are, you know, wherever they are in the world, and without the need of moving and, you know, living the life of an expat, they can suddenly accelerate their growth, personal growth, career growth, by, you know, being part of the ideal team for them globally, and, you know, have access without the need to move to the Bay Area. They can have access to, you know, being part of a great, sophisticated team.
It's super interesting that you mentioned this, you know, more remote regions, because I was actually meaning to ask you how you think that remote work is changing the global economy, particularly in regions like Latin America and Eastern Europe.
Yeah, so I think, and this is one of the things Yura mentioned, like how people are actually employed. I think one of the things that need to happen, and legal is, the law is always, you know, a little bit behind the trends, but, you know, somehow different countries need to be able to find, you know, a legal framework that makes sense in this context, where, you know, you have companies from one place. In our case, the main market is the US, hiring talent all over the world, right? So that, you can always go with Yura's approach of, you know, outsourcing, but we talk to a lot of companies that they don't want to outsource. They want to build the knowledge in-house, and there's not an easy, flexible way to, you know, really build a global team. So there's definitely some change that needs to happen in that front, Alison.
You always have this trade-off, right, between development and comfort. If you want to develop, if you want to grow, you have to leave your comfort zone. And the comfort zone is usually like when you resign to human nature, right? And human nature is like, okay, we want to only deal with members of our tribe. Only people who talk like us, same language, you know, I don't know, look similar to us, watch same movies, and so on and so forth. But this, as in many other cases, you know, like staying in your cave with your tribe means like you are going to lose, right? Because there will be other tribes out there, like other hunters, gatherers out there who broke through this taboo. And they will be ahead of you, right? Because they will know more, they will face more challenges, they will learn faster, they will be stronger, they will get more territory, and so on. So I think this metaphor perfectly scales to the global scale. This becomes a question of competitiveness. So if you stick to like the old comfort zone, very soon you will find yourself on the losing side of a talent game. You're not gonna have best talent in your company, because best talent not necessarily is in the same zip code that your offices are. So it's just like the question of, you know, of first mover's advantage. The other thing is the convergence of rates, the convergence of salaries. think that's like the next big thing, which is already happening in like small pockets of the market. In particular, like what we see in the very top level, you know, highest level engineering expertise. And I believe, like Diego, correct me if I'm wrong, it's true both for Latin America and for Eastern Europe and for any regions, when the top, the very top engineers in like the most in-demand expertise verticals, like data science, for example, they earn pretty much the same, no matter where they are based physically, right? Like there is this convergence already. They are part of like a global economy already. So I think we are going to see more and more of that. And it's impactful for outsourcing in particular, because outsourcing has built like 30 and 40 years ago, completely on the rates arbitrage, on like, you know, global division of labor and like this difference of salaries in different regions. And during these several decades, like this margin has been eaten like step by step. So outsourcing has to transform dramatically if it, you know, the companies there don't want to find themselves in the middle income trap in the next like 10 to 20 years, or maybe even sooner.
The fact that you're mentioning this initial arbitrage and the fact that the gap is now shrinking, I think it's super interesting. And we get that question a lot, right? How is compensation different in different parts of Latin America, which is our focus? And we have studied this question, and the answer is it doesn't really change. But it doesn't change for a very select group of engineers or of people, of talent, which is, you know, the talent that is part of that global talent pool that you're mentioning, right? Talent that are part of the global talent pool, they're more part of that group than part of the local market, talent market, right? So it's like two very different groups of people. What it takes, you know, being part of that global talent pool has a lot of benefits, right? Obviously, as you're mentioning, compensation, but at the same time, as we were talking earlier, it's really having access to, you know, super interesting challenges and super interesting teams, right? You become part of this global playground. The side effect of this is what happens to everybody else. What happens to the talent that, you know, doesn't speak English? And I think that's the main one. Or maybe they're not ready, or they don't have access to the right infrastructure to be able to work remotely for, you know, a global company. That second part is, of course, shrinking with all of the infrastructure development. What really happens is that you're basically left behind, right? You're missing out on this huge opportunity that exists. So we need to work, and of course we need this global talent pool to get as big as possible. So we are constantly working to help local talent that is not part of that global talent pool to upskill and to become part of that, doing things like offering English stipends so that they can improve their level of English and their comfort in working in a different language.
You know, now that since we've been mentioning kind of like the advantages of this global workforce, I'd also love to talk about, from a company's perspective, the issues of this global expansion of remote work. Like particularly, how do you think that companies can tackle the challenges of international hiring? How can they deal with, you know, issues such as compliance risks and cultural barriers and so on and so forth?
Obviously, we have, let's say, a huge lag between where, you know, the technological frontier currently is and like the where are like the most modern tendencies in workplace in particular, which are enabled by those technologies, right? Such as fast internet, such as a lot of like communication tools and so on, like this tool that we are using, right? Or similar like Zoom that people can talk. And where the political and legal and in many ways, like regulatory landscape is still. So there is a huge lag here, I don't know, maybe for decades, because in one hand, we are living in a globalized world, right? Like we have a lot of companies that employ people across borders already, that have clients in many countries, you know, partners and so on. But at the same time, we have very different rules, which are not homogenized country by country. We have very different ways those rules are being enforced. This changes really, really slowly. So I would say that's a huge barrier in general. Like in general, existence of borders and like absence of like more or less homogeneous common rules for business, they've always been like a huge detractor to progress. But on top of that, if you look from technical perspective, what we hear is like the biggest problem so far, the biggest pain is like the time zone difference and asynchronous communication, which is the obvious answer here. It's not just like a particular technology or tool. It requires organization to adopt different way of conduct, you know, like different way of work on all levels, like how you message, how you build the meetings, how you build the documentation, reporting, and so on and so forth. So I think that's like the next biggest challenge to overcome before, you know, global workplace becomes commonplace. And it's a huge potential. It's a huge opportunity for a lot of companies, a lot of startups, basically, to build solutions here.
Absolutely. Communication is key to building a distributed team. As Yura was saying, it's all about communication. Definitely the last couple of years where everybody worked remotely had a huge impact on what it means to build a team, right? When you have a team working from an office and then a small part of that team working remotely, you know, things like meetings become really tricky because suddenly you have 10 people in a meeting taking the meeting from a conference room, and then one or two people taking the call via Zoom. And actually, this is personal experience. Some of the decisions would be made after the meeting was over, right? So you cannot build a team that way. You need to think about, you know, how to effectively communicate with everyone and kind of put everyone at the same level, no matter where they are. Building a global team, an international team, is, you know, all about having the right processes and the right communication. And for now, until we figure out async communication, time zone becomes very, very, very important. And that's one of the reasons we see so much traction for, you know, recruiting specifically in Latin America versus other parts of the world. But I think the world is moving in the right direction, and there's a big opportunity for, and we see a lot of tools emerging that are trying to figure out or help teams operate better across time zones using more async communication.
And as challenging as these challenges can be, I definitely see companies like Nexon and Uteam that tackle these issues head on and, you know, with specific tactics and strategies in place that allow for a smooth and seamless communication and workflow. So it's definitely possible to do it. So switching topics a little bit, from your perspective, how can a U.S. company that doesn't have experience working with outsourcing adapt to an offshore staff augmentation working model? What key insights should they have in mind for this?
To answer your question, we have to start with that outsourcing is not like one solution for everything, not one size fits all. There are jobs, there are particular cases in which it's a good idea to outsource or just like to hire contract engineers, in particular, if we're talking about like technology businesses. In some cases, it's probably not the best strategy. Like, for example, you normally want your core team, your core IP, right? The part of your business, which is its unique advantage, to be all in-house. And for this, you want to have, you don't want to outsource that because first of all, it creates additional risks, obviously, but then less obviously, this is the part that you probably would iterate and change a lot. And it just works better. It's more efficient if you have the team in-house, which has all the knowledge to do that. But the best case for outsourcing is, first of all, if you have a limited time horizon. So let's say you want to experiment with a certain direction, certain feature or product, and you're not sure if you're going to need them after, let's say, 9 months or 1 year, right? You might discontinue them if you don't have like sufficient market response. Or there is something outside the domain of expertise of your core team that you want to build. And there is really doesn't make sense for you to hire additional people in order to build, you know, something which, again, probably wouldn't be continued that much. So these are like two best cases for outsourcing. You also can think about saving money, but again, this is becoming less and less relevant. Like basically when you are making decision about, you know, what how to outsource, the main thing is not to confuse like these models between each other, not trying to use outsourcing as a substitute of in-house hire and vice versa. And in this case, like what you have to be prepared to do, you still need a certain management side, right? It's not like you just abdicate, you know, this part of work and it's all getting done automatically. Like remote developers, contract developers, they still need onboarding. They need to develop understanding of your core product, of your business objectives, in order to be efficient. But on the positive side, again, you have more flexibility here, right? So if flexibility and speed is what you're looking for, then this is the model that works better than any others.
There are times when it makes sense to grow your in-house team as opposed to outsource a project or part of a project or even use staff augmentation. So for this case of companies that need to grow their in-house teams, right? Just like you mentioned, Yura, Diego, how can a company that is only now becoming remote adapt to these, you know, remote and international recruiting processes?
So if the company is only now becoming remote, I wonder what they were doing the last 2 years. I don't think we're going to run into a lot of those cases anymore. It used to be the case 3 years ago, but now, you know, maybe a lot of companies are not hiring internationally just yet, and that's where we help. But most companies, they've been operating remotely anyway, even if everyone is in the same city, right? So hiring internationally, it's tricky, right? Because you know what you know, and oftentimes you don't know what you don't know. Hiring internationally means, you know, understanding a different culture. It means understanding what schools are good, what companies are, you know, offer good training. It means understanding, you know, how people interview in different countries. So again, we work mainly with companies from the US, and, you know, US candidates, they have their own way of preparing for interviews, for example. And oftentimes we get feedback from clients saying, you know, this candidate showed up and they felt like they were not prepared for the interview, or they were not asking a lot of questions, or they were not answering, you know, the typical question, what are you best at, or why do you want to join this company? And it's just typically because from a cultural perspective, candidates from Latin America are just different. They're used to different things. They come from different backgrounds. They're not used to, you know, sharing a shiny story about why they are the most amazing candidates. It's just culturally different. I'm sure it's the same in Eastern Europe and you know in Ukraine. So as a company or as a hiring manager, when you decide you want to start recruiting in other places, in other parts of the world, you need to make sure you understand either that you understand, you know, how that part of the world operates along all of these lines, or you know, you find a good partner that can help you understand how things work. And that's typically how we help, right? We try to be the go-to partner for all, you know, talent-related purposes in Latin America. So if a company is trying to build a team in Latin America, we want to be there for them to show them the way, to explain to them, you know, the cultural differences, how to attract the talent, how to screen the talent, how to know, you know, how to fix, how to correct some performance issues and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was actually going to ask, you know, how a company can understand whether they need to build their in-house team or to outsource. But I feel like we've covered that already perfectly. So I would love to know from Yura's perspective as an expert on staff augmentation, what are the biggest benefits of staff augmentation?
First of all, it's flexibility, right? Like what I was telling at the very beginning, the world is changing at an accelerated rate, right? Like look at several years in the past, right? Did we expect most of the things that happened, I don't know, in the last 3 years and how they're going to change, you know, the business, the workplace and so on. But what is interesting, it looks like this is only going to be faster. So I think every business is feeling that pressure. And what, you know, what using contractors or sometimes called staff augmentation means is that you have this flexibility, right? Because first of all, it's much faster, time to hire, time to like their first day when they kind of start generating value for the company. But also what's important, if things change and you don't need this expertise anymore, you don't have to face this difficult question, right? Like whether to start making up work for a person just because, you know, they are already there on the payroll, or you know, cut their job and face like certain moral downturn for the rest of the team. So in this case, I would say this is the biggest advantage. And again, that's why I believe we will see more and more, let's say percentage ratio of this model in the workplace in the future, just because like the world is accelerating. Second thing is that you are usually able to tap into much wider pool of talent and a different pool of talent. If you look at global workforce of engineers which are employed by consulting outsourcing firms worldwide, is between 3 and 5 million people. This is a lot. Like there are in total between 20 and 25 million engineers in the world. And if you, for example, take all the freelancers combined, right? On all websites of Upwork, Stoptiles, Fiverr, et cetera, of this world, you get 750,000 only. And these are Upwork data, right? Upwork has every initiative to, you know, put as big number as possible. So we have several times bigger talent pool to tap into, and the talent pool which is not available otherwise, because like most of those people are not looking for a job actively, they're not listed anywhere. So you get a very, very different pool of talent, and very often a quality pool of talent, because unlike freelancers, people who are employed full time, right? They are usually higher quality, because there is always a trade-off. If you want to work on a freelance portal, like full time, this means you don't have a job security, right? And it tends that the better, the more experienced, the more valuable a talent is, the more alternative they have, and the less they are inclined to, you know, either look for a job at this very moment or go to a freelance portal. So there is a huge, there is an opportunity to snap a really, really great talent there. Yeah, I would say those are two main advantages. The third one is probably the lowest overhead, right? Like all the small stuff is taken care of by their company. It's basically the easiest way to hire someone in terms of overhead, because it's like you only focus on deliverables. All the legal part, like all their training, their social life, their like the office, if anyone is still using it, and so on, is taken care of. So you don't have to think about it, and you don't. What is important, if it's a bigger team especially, you don't have to invest additionally on like your company side into building like a management operation to work with that team. This has all been taken care of.
So Diego, from your, you know, your expertise is actually helping companies build high-performing remote teams. So I wanted to ask you, what are the benefits of, or the main benefits of building your own team?
I think Yura did a very good job describing it earlier. I think in some cases you just need an outsourced team or a team of contractors or freelancers, and I do believe that your team does a very good job at, you know, making the process of finding the right person a lot more efficient, you know, by connecting supply and demand. If you look at supply, there are some big companies, but there are a lot of really good smaller companies that maybe don't have access to the talent pool. So your team is right there in the middle, trying to make things more efficient. And I think that's where Yura is doing a great job. Building your own team is just very different. When you build your own team, you are controlling the whole experience. You are typically picking the right person for the job. Typically, the assignment is going to be, or the engagement is going to be, longer term. So, you know, in cases where you're developing a product and you need, and you know that the ramp up period for that talent you're trying to hire is going to be 6 months, and they're only really going to be good at the job after a year or year and a half, then, you know, the hiring model, the building your own team, is a lot more appealing and definitely the right option. I think as a founder, when we work with founders or when we work with bigger companies, the question really is, you know, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to build? And from there, you need to decide whether this is something you want to control at the distance, or whether this is something you want to, you know, build in-house and control and manage in the details, because the process is for finding the talent are very, very different, right? So if you need the right person for a task, then maybe going to Upwork is the right thing. But if you need, you know, to build a team and to make that team flourish and grow over time, and, you know, maybe even turn this into a competitive advantage, then, you know, it's a different equation. And you need to build your own internal team.
Exactly. Like this, basically, the work market is the biggest market ever in the world. Like the whole global economy, whatever is done, right, can be traced down to some person doing some work, right, like with some tools, with some equipment. And even if we take only like the white collar jobs, like the vertical that us and Diego work with, it's still a huge market. It really depends on the job to be done, which model is optimal. They are compatible. They are not competing, compatible, not competing. So you can, my understanding, as I said, is that if you have your core job, core expertise, then hiring in-house is probably the best way to do it, because this is basically equals, right? Like your business, it's existential part of your product. So you really want it to keep in house, and you want to continuity of knowledge to be perceived within the company. And this is where Nexton is doing amazing job, really picking the gems from the market, the hidden gems. That's what the hardest, right? Like, because if your market is familiar, if you are hiring a new zip code, then maybe you have personal networks, your recruitment have personal networks, so you have this access. But what is important that the best people, they rarely look for a job actively. They usually are passive or hidden candidates. So it takes a lot of additional effort, homework, and sometimes little magic in order to be able to reach out to them and also to convince them that this is a better opportunity. And that's what Nexton does. And I was wondering how they do that because I had no idea. You know, it's the definition of magic, right? You see something happening, but you don't understand all the mechanics, like what's happening in the black box. So we talked to one of the companies that we sent to Nexton, because like they came to us, but it turned out they didn't need contractors, they need a full-time hire. So we sent them to Diego, but after few, and they were super happy, you know, a lot of happy feedback and so on. And like we interviewed the founder a couple of months after, and what he said is that Nexton's magic sauce, secret sauce, or magic ingredient is that they build the whole process, optimizing it for the candidate, from the candidate experience perspective. And this is really gold, because the problem is, how do you, if you want the best people, you really have to win their attention, you have to win their commitment, because they always have alternatives, and very good alternatives sometimes. So it's so important and so crucial, but at the same time, so often forgotten, how important it is to build the candidate experience in the way that, you know, it's kind of proxy for them, how their experience is going to look like in your company, in your workplace. It works on that kind of level. So, and I think this is a very important lesson that we all can learn from Nexton. And even, you know, if you are doing this yourself, if you are hiring people yourself, you must think from that perspective, from their point of view, how to build all the process, starting from the very first touch, very first message exchange or phone call with your recruiter, so that it becomes a proxy on how great, how wonderful their experience is going to be working with your company.
If you could go back when you first started UTeam, what advice would you give to your past self? And like, what I mean is, what advice would you give to leaders who are now starting their own company?
All these mistakes, everything that we did, all the mistakes that we made, they were inevitable, and they were a part of what led us to where we are at the moment. And you never know how it's going to unfold further. So I think like your question is really of a philosophical worldview level. And there is this beautiful Chinese, like ancient Chinese tale that I really like, you know, in this regard. It's about a farmer who had three horses, and like one day the horses broke, you know, the fence and ran away to the mountains. And like his neighbors, like, commiserated with him and said, oh, how bad, and so on. But he said, wait, and we will see. So in a few days, the horses came back, and they brought with them five more wild horses that they befriended. They became kind of family. So, you know, he now had eight horses. The neighbors came back and said, oh, how lucky you are. Wow, what a beautiful thing. And he said, wait and see. So in a few days, his son rode one of the wild horses, and that one was really, really wide and untamed. So he threw the son on the ground, and he broke his leg. And like, again, neighbors say, oh, this is a tough luck, bad luck, you know. And the farmer says, wait and see. And then in a few days, there is a draft coming. you know, from the emperor is gathering an army for the war. And his son is not conscripted because, like, his leg is broken. And it's everyone again says, oh, you are so lucky. And he says, wait and see. So honestly, every startup story is unique. Whatever happens, you know, it's part of it. There must be mistakes. There must be pain. There must be tough things. And it is inevitable. So there is no really recipe other than just go ahead, just be bold and enjoy whatever happens. And this is all part of your story.
Wow, I loved the Chinese proverb. it was an amazing metaphor, actually. I wasn't expecting it.
Yeah, I guess all that matters is, you know, build something meaningful with purpose and enjoy the ride, right, as you said.
So thank you so much for joining me today. It was amazing talking with you both and, you know, getting to deep dive into international recruiting. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, this season we're actually bringing many tech industry experts that are going to share their knowledge and insights with us. So be sure not to miss it. And whether you're a company looking for highly skilled professionals to join your teams, or whether you're a senior tech professional looking to land a long-term opportunity at a US company, visit nextonlabs.com to see how we can help you achieve that.